This year's Live Full Report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two, about 20 minutes in. We kind of meandered a little bit this morning. And looking forward, though, to Rich Migliori joining us. And for Team Migliori, it was a tremendous day yesterday. How about Trevor McCarthy? Four straight wins. And McCarthy really settling into a nice beat right now, also a new father, of course, as well. He and Katie Bug with their daughter, Riley, and, of course, Rich's son, Joe, is handling the book for Trevor McCarthy. And I got a bunch of stuff for Richie. And, of course, those of us, we've been watching how Rich has had to deal with the weather out on the farm, including, I think, on Friday night, having to go out and with those -3 degree temperatures. Rich, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, it's been a little bit of a rough stretch. And, you know, I have an office in the barn, which is heated, you know, and the hot water heater's in there. And then there's a staircase that goes up to the hayloft through the office. And, you know, we have some chutes that you throw down hay down the chutes. Well, somebody, and it was not me, left the loft door open. And, you know, it was, you know, below zero, and we had all that cold air because the loft isn't heated. Come in, and it froze the pipes.
Ooh.
Thankfully, we did not have any pipes break, but it took a better part of the day to get everything thawed out enough to be able to, you know, water everything off in the barn. And I, you know, I was lugging water from the house. So that wasn't great. And then just the sheer pain of, you know, mucking stalls in the car. I mean, you got gloves and you're dressed appropriately, but it's just so bitterly cold.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing too is, which you don't realize, and obviously I'm at that age now, you know, my hands took such a beating, you know, riding. And I have so many little calcium deposits and, like, arthritic, you know,
sure,
sites on my knuckles and stuff that you get come in and just, man, your hands ache so bad for, like, an hour. But anyway, it's last night we got snow, but some ice, some rain. We didn't get as much snow as we thought, but because it kind of turned into a mix. But now we're supposed to get a little more snow this afternoon. But hey, you want to live upstate New York, right?
Exactly. And we actually got Tina and I think I woke up at first 2:30 at some point, and I peeked out. I must have woken Tina up because she saw me looking out the window because I was curious, and she must have been up at some point because she said, "There's nothing yet. A little bit." And sure enough, this morning we got up at 5:00. It was like there's nothing. There's 2 inches maybe.
Yeah, I mean it started a little bit early here last night, but like I said, it kind of switched over. And the guy who helps to plow, down the driveway to the house and up to the barn, he came last night and kind of primed everything, sanded and salted underneath, so that when he came this morning, at least, the mix that we anticipated, we weren't going to get as much icy conditions. But, the horses were in for a couple days because it was just so bitterly cold, and we did have ice, and horses and ice don't mix. And yesterday we were able to turn them out for a little while, and we had the 20-something-year-old and a 31-year-old bouncing around like they were, yearlings again. And we're like, oh, God, please don't slip and break a hip or something,
yep, exactly.
But they had a good time, and at least they got out, because today I don't think we're turning anybody out. We're just, we'll open. The one thing about my barn, which is kind of cool, Steve, is that they have their stalls, but then you can open their back part of the stall, not the part that faces in towards the center aisle of the barn. And then they have a little, outdoor patio. They have their own little paddock in the back that they can either go inside or outside as they please. And, it gives them enough, freedom and fresh air that even if you can't turn them out, they're not, cooped up in the stall bored,
Yeah, and in fact, it's funny you say that because later, after 11, we're talking to Eric Mitchell, who, won an Eclipse for his coverage of the situation involving shipping of the horses by freight to Puerto Rico. And that topic about air circulation and cutouts it's funny that you include that, because that we're going to end up talking about that a little bit next hour with Eric. Richie, on a crazy scenario before we talk about the racing and the Wilson shoot, which we're going to talk about, I don't want to let this slip through, because there was a chance that one of our guests this morning, you turned out in my research as I went to find out more, you had a connection. And okay. Not only did you have a connection, but virtually everything that we were going to talk about to some degree was going to have a connection, because while the horse in question was being trained in the U.S., somebody with a tie in. And I'm trying to figure out how I can throw this at you so that you can either guess the horse.
Well, you got me on the edge of my seat. I've got to be honest with you.
All right. This goes back into the 90s. In fact, both of our topics, when we get to the Wilson shoot, we're going to go into the 90s. At 10-1 at Gulfstream Park, of all places.
Mm-hmm.
Career best performance for this mare by Silver Deputy.
Wow.
Out of a Bold Ruckus mare, which should right away say this is an Ontario bred.
Yeah.
You had a tough trip, and yet you win off by 3 in the First Lady, the Grade 3.
That.
Scott Zanna is right, trained by...
it was owned by Chicken Dance.
It was Bruno Chicken Dance is the owner.
Who is it? I can't remember.
Michael Wright.
Michael Wright, yes, yeah, of course, yeah. Wow.
It,
Wow.
Michael Wright, to me, it's one of the amazing stories that Marty McGee latched onto it last week, because he has taken over the training for John Brenges of Nantucket Red, and of course his late daughter Ashley had trained, and Coldbrook Farms. And this winter at Tampa, he's 7-for-7.
Yeah, you know what? I read that this last night. It's so ironic. Wow, that you brought this up. And now, you know, you want to go into connections, too. Michael McCarthy, Trevor McCarthy's dad,
correct,
wrote Scott Santa a bunch as well.
Correct. When Alan Iwinski had the mayor in Delaware and kept nice company, wasn't as... Got better, actually, that next year and that next winter when they went down to Florida. Wins the first lady, second in the Shirley Jones with Shane Sellers aboard. Bridgemo rotor at Aqueduct in the distaff handicap. Then they went back to Florida in the Poinciana. Ibarcoa rode. There's also a name in here that for whatever reason, Rich, and you latched right on to the McCarthy aspect, there's a jock that rode this filly early in her career who had a tremendous, including a win in the Prioress, that you never hear his name.
Who's that?
And he won 3,500 races. Robin Platts.
Wow, Robin Platts, a great rider. I actually... was, you know, an apprentice when I went to ride the first Japan Cup, and he rode in the race, and we were all together, because back then you were really sequestered. You went into the jockey's room Friday afternoon, early afternoon, and you were not allowed to leave until you were done riding for the weekend. And they had dormitories in the back, so we all had rooms there, and they had, like, a place for you to work out and a spa. And I remember being in the steam room with Robin Platts, and I want to say Gary Stahlbaum, a couple Canadian riders, and, you know, we'd be sweating, and then they had this, like, plunge pool. It was, like, really cold water, so you come out of the steam room all hot and everything, and you just dive into this, like, cold 6-foot tub of, you know, water. It was a pretty interesting thing, but, yeah, Robin Platts was a great rider. I mean, he rode Overskate. He rode a bunch of terrific horses, and I believe it's his son works up in Woodbine with their TV, because when we did the Jockey Cup tour on Fox up there, he was very helpful and couldn't have been more accommodating and welcoming. And I actually spoke with Doug Thomas, who used to ride in Jersey, and he's from Canada, and he brought up Robin Platts last week when we were talking, and how they talk all the time, like they grew up together and like trained to be jockeys together. This is crazy, the connections. And now, you brought up Scott Zanna. I rode Scott Zanna, won that stake on her, but had to ride Harpia back for John Kimmel, a Danzig filly of Judmont's.
And you won the Shirley Jones.
And won the Shirley Jones. Now, but the interesting part, and we want to talk about connections, because Trevor's married to Katie Davis. My brother Michael works for Dylan Davis. I obviously competed with Robbie, and we're friends, you know, good friends now. We were not when we rode. We didn't really get along very well. That's just being competitive, and I was, you know, a little edgy. But he had actually ridden Harpia for John the first two or three starts in North America. And she went on the shelf for a little while, and I used to get on horses every single day for John. I would usually pick out a two-year-old to go gallop every day. You know, one every season would be my two-year-old, and I would do all the work with them because I enjoyed that. Plus, it made me have the motivation to be at the barn every single day early, no matter what the weather or anything. Like, I got to get on my baby. And John wanted me to go to Florida that winter, and I really wasn't keen on going to Florida. And we went out to dinner, and he says, listen, you know, you're riding all of my horses. You know, we work great together. I really want you to come to Florida. I don't want to put other guys on these horses. Now, the only horse I really basically wasn't riding was Harpia. And she had gotten back to the barn after her layoff and was training. And And I said to John, I said, well, John, you say I ride all of them. I said, I might not ride your best one. He goes, what are you talking about? I said, Harpia. And he goes, well, Rob, you won on her, and I can't, how do I take them off winning? And I said, well, you're asking me to leave home, leave my family in New York, come to Florida. I said, and you're not even giving me your best horse. And the next day I went by the barn. He goes, you know, you're right. You got the mount if you come to Florida. And that's how I got Robbie off of Harpia. So like, you see this crazy web of...
That's great. That is great.
Well, and that, I remember Robbie being so mad. He was
gosh, I can't imagine why.
I don't blame him. But you see, if you get on one like that, you camp out. You check on that mare every single day. Every time you see John Kimball, I don't care if she's on the farm. You say, hey, John, how's my big mare? How's her? Every day you reinforce it. That's a jockey's lot in life. You have to stay on top of it. If not, someone's creeping in the back door.
That is funny, and I just pulled up the Shirley Jones, and a quiz for everybody. The Shirley Jones, and everybody knows I do not like the paving over of stake names. The Shirley Jones, now known as,
oh gosh, I have no idea.
The Inside Information.
Okay, well, great mare, Inside Information.
Now, Shirley Jones, a pretty great mare.
Yeah, I mean, you know, no doubt. You know, that's kind of funny, too, because I walked into the feed store the other day, and they must have had, like, a radio station on that was, like, you know, 70s music, and it was David Cassidy, and it just got me thinking about him. And you know, as a kid, of course you were aware of the Partridge Family and watched that on TV and stuff, and then getting to know him and become friendly with him in Saratoga. And I actually got sad, you know, thinking about how the latter part of his life went, and you know, died much too young. And he really loved racing. He loved the horse. He loved racing. King Swan had come back to the track as a pony. And me and Angel were out at Saratoga, and we had both won big races on King Swan. I think I won the Boojum on him. We ran like 8 and change that day. And David Cassidy was there. And that's when he had more horses with Gary Contessa. And he had been telling us how he rode a lot when he was a kid. So we convinced him to get on King Swan. And he's like, I don't know, I've never been on a race. He's not a racehorse anymore. He's a pony. Get on him. And he got up on King Swan. And King Swan sneezed. Like he went... David Cassidy was 50 yards away, as fast as I ever seen anybody run in my life. Jumped off and took off running. I was like, you just sneezed, David. It's not a big deal.
I actually got, it's funny that David's name comes up. I got a note from a woman that's putting together or has put together a scholarship or a charity in David's name. And I haven't had a chance to, she wrote to me midweek last week, and I haven't had a chance to get back to her. I will do that. Well, yeah, this was funny because
he loved racing, he loved breeding, he loved the whole thing. And you know, despite whatever demons he was battling, you know, particularly later in his life, I always enjoyed his company. He was always really a great guy with me.
Well, I wanted to surprise you with Scott Zanna, and we'll talk tomorrow with Michael Wright, who is English by birth and has been in North America, I don't know, 30 plus years, and I'm guessing that. That John Burness, you know, reached out to him when Ashley passed tragically, and what he's got going right now is the craziest thing I've ever seen. Every horse he's sending out is winning, and he's perfect 7 for 7 since the start of the winter, since coming back down from Woodbine, and you know, and Robin Platts, I'm guaranteed there's some people that have to pull up his Hall of Fame page. He's in the Canadian Hall of Fame since 97, actually. What's unbelievable, and he won 4 Queen's Plates, and yet here's a jock that is not widely known in North America, despite in the U.S., certainly in Canada and the Canadian circles, and he won. you know, he won his share of big races in the 80s and 90s when he would come in. Only won the Sovereign Award once, which is a little surprising. But what's amazing is how many, to me, when you look up his successes, listen to the names. You mentioned Overskate. Listen to the names of horses he rode that now have stakes named after them in Woodbine. You got Overskate, Glorious Song, I think Frost King, Charlie Barley, Jolie's Halo. A personal favorite of mine is Vestia, although I don't think he was Vestia's regular rider.
You know, Donnie Seymour wound up riding his Vestia through that Triple Crown, and I ridden Iskandar Lakbar for Pat Collins had him, but then Danny Vella took over when Pat was killed outside of Payson Park, got hit by a truck pulling out of the gate there. And I worked Iskandar Lakbar that morning. Carmella came with me as we drove up from near Gulfstream to Payson early in the morning. I worked him, and normally I'd go have breakfast with Pat, and I rode a lot of races that afternoon at Gulfstream, and Carmella wanted to get back. And I said, listen, I'm going to pass on breakfast this morning. We'd go into Indian Town and get breakfast. I said, I got to hustle back and ride. And by the time I got to the jockey's room up at Gulfstream, I found out that he pulled out of the gate to go have breakfast and got hit by that truck. And if Carmella hadn't gone with me that morning, I most likely would have been in the car with him.
Wow.
And Iskandar Lakbar could really run. He was a very tough colt. Broke his maiden at Gulfstream. We all wore the black armbands. Anybody associated with Pat and the stable. And that was Steven Stavros, the guy who won the Toronto Maple Leafs. And there was a farm name, and I can't remember it. But in the plate trial, or one of the preps for the plate, I had kind of put Izvestia in a pickle on Iskandar Lakbar. I kind of ran him into a blind switch. It wasn't anything. It was something you would do, you know, any day of the week in any race. And he still beat me easily. Izvestia, he took up and came around and still won. And there was a big uproar, and I had to go up there. They were going to revoke my license, that I was a rough rider. Donnie Seymour accused me of dirty tactics. And it was like a big hullabaloo. And if Mr. Stavros wasn't so strong in the parliament there, I don't think they would have let me ride him in the plate.
Wow.
But I think I wound up third in the plate, and Izvestia won it easily. But he was a very good horse. And Mike Keogh, who went on to train for the other Sick and Dance, and had Wando, who won the Triple Crown. He was Roger Atfield's assistant all through the period of time when they were winning those Triple Crowns, and then he went on to win his own. Mike, a tremendous horse, and became a dear friend of mine, and he trained for the elder Sick and Dance, and they had Wando.
Gus.
And he,
for Gus.
He would talk, right, yes, Gus. He would rave about Robin Platts. He thought Robin Platts was one of the best riders he ever saw, and Mike was always such a good judge of riders and horses, and anytime you brought up Robin Platts, he would have some great story or great ride, or, you know, just thought he was absolutely as good a rider as he'd ever seen.
Well, the four plates that Platts won, most closely associated with Gil Roundtree and Stafford Farms, that won three plates in 5 years. He won with, Victoria's Song, but that was for Larry Grant and Greenhills. But then in 74, Amber Herod, which was the second plate in a row. Royal Chocolate had won with Ted Colangelo for Stafford and Gil Roundtree. Then comes back in 77, Roundtree and Stafford and Platts with Sound Reason, and won his fourth with Key to the Moon for Roundtree with BKY Stable in 84. Robin Platts.
Wow. Yeah, isn't it amazing? It truly is amazing. Like, all the web that kind of spreads out, and all the people that you know and the connections, it's remarkable. Like, racing, it's such a, you know, it's international, but it's so intimate, too. Like, you know people, you know, you can go anywhere, and you're going to run into somebody you know. somebody you had some kind of connection with like this. I'm looking up something right now as we speak because I remember Robin Platts coming into Belmont the year I had the bug to ride a two-year-old in a stake. And I might be remembering it wrong. You know, we're at that age where you start having, your mind changes things a little bit, if you will. But I remember I was on a horse named Gray Bucket for Steve DeMauro, really fast two-year-old. And he was getting out really bad with me. I was on the lead. And Angel was on a horse for Gustav Ring, Carlos Garcia. And I couldn't hold my horse in, and Robin Platts got through and won the stake. Again, my mind might be playing tricks on me, but I thought that was the case. And I remember
at Belmont,
so mad at Belmont, but I can't find it. So I might be remembering it wrong.
Well, what year?
You know what? Maybe it was Tremont. I thought it was, but.
Well, because he did participate in the Flash and in the Youthful in 81.
That was the Flash. It was the Flash.
There you go.
And what was
the 81 Flash.
Do you see who he wrote?
Hold on. Because Equibase is, a little verklept, you can't get a chart there. So we're going to go reach behind us, Rich. And here is the 1983 racing manual. And the Flash may not be in the manual. By that time, the Flash was sort of fading from its rich history. It's faded to the point where we don't have it anymore. But let's see if it's in here. There's a chance it might be the Flamingo, the Fayette, the Flamingo, and the Florida Derby. No. All right, I'll go to a second resource. Let's see if you.
You know what I think it was.
Well, hold on. Wait a minute.
All right.
Wait a minute, because it's right in front of me. Who in 82? Who'd you ride in that Flamingo?
Oh, Cutlass, horse for Gene Jacobs, right?
For Bud Lettman.
Oh gosh, I have no memory of that at all, then.
KG Cougar.
Wow. Wait. That was Bud Dell, not Bud Lettman.
No, well, the chart says. Bud Lettman.
KG Cougar was trained by Delp, though, I thought.
No, well, this I'm looking at the
I
chart
used
here.
I ride a horse for Bud Lettman called Someone Frisky, and he was like one of those horses that was better going fast than slow. Like I went on him at the Meadowlands. I got to look this horse up now because I think that's wrong. Bud Delp trained KG Cougar.
Isn't this that's interesting because this is the chart in the racing manual and Timely Writer won it.
Yeah, but if you look up KG Cougar on Equibase and he ran all through that period of time and there's
that's crazy.
The race at Hialeah, the Flamingo, and he was trained by Bud Delp the entire time. For the Bayards.
Wow, so this is, how about that? The chart, so the, this is crazy. The chart's wrong.
Listen, I'll go on a quick rant. When I had the bug, I won 20 races in Saratoga in a 24-day meet, got hurt. And then years later, Julian Leperu won, I don't know, 18, 19, 20 races at Saratoga in a much longer meet. And they wrote in the local papers and stuff how it was a new record for apprentices. He broke Rafael Mojica's record of 12 wins at the Saratoga meet for an apprentice. I won 20 in a 24-day meet. Now, when Kent DeZormo won 13 stakes as an apprentice, they said, oh, he broke Steve Cawthon's apprentice record with 10. I had 11 stakes as an apprentice. So all of these things, and this is right there, facts in your face. Bud Delp trained that horse. There's no doubt about it.
Amazing, and I'm looking at this chart. Boy, this is some chart actually, and with Dominic Impresia and Gene Jacobs, Jacques Dumas, Roger Lauren, Howie Tesher, Jimmy Islin, Manny Asparua, Newcomb Green, and it's got Bud Lettman. Anthony Basile has actually had an entry. Blue had a horse in here.
Oh, really?
And Le Jolie, and that Angel rode.
Le Jolie was a nice horse. He was a nice horse. And Basile was Barma's on farm, though.
Say again?
Anthony Basile trained for Boamazon, that entry, if I'm not...
Yes, yes. Boamazon is right. The horse of Howie's was Wolfie's Rascal.
Well, yeah, because I used to love to go to that Wolfie's there, the deli.
Yep.
By Collins Avenue up over there.
Of course.
Howie lives to go there. If he was done at 10 a.m., come on, let's go to Wolfie's. I can't. I got to go pull weight. I can't. Oh, come on. I got to hurt you. Come on.
We were more Pumpernicks than Wolfie's.
Yeah, Pumpernicks was good, too. How about was Pumpernicks the bagel place right outside of Gulfstream? Was that, or no, that was a different place. You know what I'm talking about? You came out the stable gate, you made the left. There was a little shopping center that had this great bagel place.
Yeah, and in fact, it was for sale. I don't know what ended up happening. It was for sale a couple of years ago, and the Sage. That's the Sage Bagels, right?
Yes, that's what it was. Sage. So me and Herb McCauley went in there one day. We were going to pick up bagels for, like, you know, we were buddies, kind of running around together, and we were going to pick up bagels for some of the barns that, you know, maybe I won a race for one barn, he won for another. So he said, "Oh, I'll show you the bagel place." And we'll go and pick up bagels for the help. And we went in there, and I remember Angie Dickinson online getting bagels. And I was blown away. Like, that's Angie Dickinson. Like, she's in that cop show, right? Like,
that's great. That's great. I don't know. We went on. This is, we're in trouble here. All right, let me try to put the train back on the rails. Let's talk about this Wilson shoot and what this means from your perspective, because there's people, there's trainers saying, oh, it's going to ruin, there won't be any two-turn fields. I've never seen anything so ridiculous. People saying, oh, the horses on the inside are doomed. It's like, just stop already. It's the craziest thing, a reaction to things before anything has happened.
Well, you know, and here's the thing. If people are reacting in, you know, that vehemently in a negative fashion, it's probably because they remember what was passed off as the Wilson shoot in the early 90s, which it wasn't a shoot at all. They basically, you know, they widened the turn a little bit, but they just parked the gate on the outside fence, and they had it angled towards the inside, but it was no shoot. There was no shoot at all. There was nothing that extended out that would give it kind of the angle it needs. So, listen, knowing Glenn Kozak and knowing how meticulous he is, this will be fine. They'll, you know, certainly have the angles proper. It won't be like the last thing. If you were post 1, 2, and even 3, you were looking at the elbow of the turn. So you had to come out riding like hell to make sure you had room and didn't get shoved into the fence. And if you were far outside, you were up against it. And if you were in the middle, you were getting caught in the jam. But it was not a shoot. So I think if they're actually going to restore what originally, how it was laid out, and there's actually a shoot, and again, knowing Glenn Kozak and how he does everything, I can't imagine they're not going to have it worked out. And I think it's exciting. I think it's, you know, horse people, horse players, people of a certain age are always reluctant for change. But sometimes change is good, and it just maybe adds a different dimension, another layer to what's always the best racing of the entire year, Saratoga. So, you know, again, if it was what they did in the early 90s, just starting horses on the outside fence to go a mile and call it a shoot, I would be against it. But I think that, you know, it seems like they've plan this out. They've looked at it, and I'm excited to see the result. I think it could again just add another layer to what's always tremendous racing.
Well, explain the difference of what they did with that, because it was sort of like that little tuck-in gate placement for the mile and a quarter races at Belmont.
Yeah, but it was a little area. So, like for the two turn races, they would pull the gate and park it there. You know, for the mile and an eighth race, like so they kind of get it out of the way. So they somebody came up with the idea. Well, we'll just break from here and go straight. And it wasn't lined out properly. You know, again, if you were in an inside post, you were looking at the rail. You were an outside post, you're figuring out how am I going to get over. It just wasn't a truly run race. So. Now with an actual chute and some extension, I remember there was like no run up. You broke right on top of that mile pole and right, into that elbow. I just remember riding a handful of races. And ironically enough, I remember winning a race from post nine of nine for Steven tomorrow. But I remember in the paddock telling him, listen, I'm just going to stop this horse the first step and drop out to last and drop to the rail because there's no way I'm going to be 10 wide, for an eighth of a mile around a turn. And I did that, and everybody kind of overcompensating for position, the inside ride so hard, they went too quick, and he wound up winning it. If I remember, paid a pretty big price. But this is different. This is, I know people have said, like, the shoot at Ellis Park was designed after the original Wilson shoot at Saratoga, and they should do fine with that. So I don't see that it's going to be an issue. Again, I'm sure there'll be little things that need to be worked out or tweaked. And like any other handicapping conundrum, I'm sure there's going to be little nuances to it that people have to get used to. But I, I'm excited. I always look at Belmont, and I always wonder, like, as sheer the size, the immensity of Belmont, why we wouldn't try different things there occasionally. Like, we break on the turn for the mile and a quarter races because they did away with the chute that broke in the middle of the training track. Why wouldn't you just run a mile and a quarter from the mile and eighth pole to an eighth past the wire? You still have 3/16 of a mile from the finish line to the first turn at Belmont. And you think about like the layout of like Churchill Downs where the finish line is, and then boom, you're right into the first turn. You could have a true mile and a quarter, one turn for home with 3/8 of a mile straightaway if you just ran to a second wire. And you have the facility, the sheer size to do it. Turf racing, why don't we try to run a mile and 16th, but run a 16th past the wire. Now you've got a 5/16 of a mile stretch with turf horses. It'll be brilliant. Horses will be tucked up, packed up, everybody together, turn for home, spread out. It'll be more European. It would be phenomenal. You could run baby races straight away, a 4.5 furlong baby race out of the chute at Belmont and just run straight. I mean, with TV now and everything, all right, so they're not going to run past the people. But, it would be akin to, like, a Widener shoot. I think experimenting and trying different things and add a level of excitement or maybe garner a little attention, and some things aren't going to work. All right, you look at it, you analyze it and go, yeah, this works and this is good and people like it, or after you try it, you reassess. But I'm with you. I don't understand the immediate shutdown of it, particularly because this time it's going to be a real shoot, not just a gate parked on the outside rail.
We're going to have Glenn Kozak tomorrow, and Glenn will talk about the construction aspects as well as everything else going on at Saratoga and Belmont, because the FOB, the Franchise Oversight Board, the Belmont, the tunnel that we've been floated for a while now is happening at Belmont, which should... should lead to some infield potential.
Steve, do you remember when they used to open the infield in Saratoga?
I can't imagine it. For whatever reason, Rich, I just can't picture it. I know that it had happened over a period of when I would come to the track, but I have no recollection.
Well, in the early 80s, they would open the infield on weekends. They would have that pull out, like that walkway, like they do at Pimlico and Preakness Day for people to get to the infield, like about the 7/8 pole. If there, you know, at Saratoga is more like the mile pole on the first turn. And to tell you how things completely changed, they would not run turf races on weekends because of that. Could you imagine them not running turf races?
How about that?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I remember Eddie Maple won the Jim Dandy on Willow Hour before he went on to win the Belmont. And he was kind of ducking out the last 16th of a mile. And there was an inquiry, and it was blinking. And back then, the stewards were much stricter than they are now. And I remember Eddie on the phone, and it was brilliant. I mean, and this is why they shouldn't talk to jockeys, because it's like, you know, pass interference. Did he hit you before the ball got there? Of course you're going to defend your position. But Eddie was saying, well, he spotted that walkway that you guys pulled over the turf. Basically laying the blame back on them. And he said, it was brilliant. It was brilliant.
That's great. That's great. I love it. Well, and whenever you talk about that, the jocks on the phone, it always makes me think of being down at Gulfstream. You know, this has got to be 10, 12 years ago. And we were in that chute, you know, from where they come out to the track from the paddock tunnel. And, you know, you're at like the, between the 16th pole and the eighth. So, you know, you're looking down the stretch. And so there's an incident, and I was with Hennig. And next thing we know, the inquiry goes up, an objection goes up, and it's Mark, and I forget who the other I don't know if I should mention the jocks or not, but Mark, you know, we're out sort of on the track apron looking down, and you know, you can see the jocks going for the phone. And Mark turns to me and says, "Ooh, I like my chances. I got the best talker."
Well, listen, honestly, you know, I had an edge. You know, Daly would have an edge. And just English being your first language is going to give you a leg up. And I just never, I don't understand it. I mean, it's akin to a referee throwing a flag and then asking the players what happened. Come on, what am I going to say? I'm going to say whatever I need to say to protect, defend my position, no? I mean, you're setting me up to be a liar, okay?
I love it. Richie, a couple of quick notes about the weekend. And, of course, yesterday we got a slip in you had the nice win by Battle Bling. That was an exciting race. And in the ladies, one of the great historic stakes in New York, and not just in New York, anywhere, and was part of Trevor's, you know, just lightning round scheme that he put together.
Kid's riding great. And Trevor's really riding great. And I was so, you know, listen, I'm thrilled for him. I'm thrilled for my son, Joseph. But I knew when they were getting together that it would be a great pairing, because the two of them have incredible work ethics. Trevor, if he gets on 7 in the morning, he's trying to figure out how he can fit in an 8th horse. I mean, he's a kid that just wants it, but he's just like his dad. Michael McCarthy wanted it as bad as anybody, and he's living proof of, you want to do something bad enough, you'll get it done. Here's a guy was not built to be a jockey, was so tall, actually was allergic to horses, used to have to wrap himself in saran wrap because he'd break out with a rash just touching the horses. People don't know this stuff. And, you know, will himself to do it, won nearly 3,000 races, a guy who really, to look at him physically, you'd say there's no way he could have a sustainable career. And not only did he have a sustainable career, he was one hell of a rider. I mean, a tremendous rider. And, you know, Trevor is such cut from his father's cloth, his work ethic, and their approach. You could see the thought process. You could see how on top of the game Trevor is. Noticing biases, picking up where the best place to be, fighting the inside when it's the place to be. I mean, I really have been so tremendously impressed with his riding. There's a lot of times a horse wins because they were going to win with any competent rider. And then there are times when jockeys make a difference. And I see Trevor making a difference on a consistent basis. He's certainly getting the most out of his mounts. And I know he and Joe are working hard. Joe's getting them on live mounts. And I get a kick out of listening to my son talk about, hey, I kind of figured out how to get in with this guy. You know, he's a little crazy till 10 o'clock in the morning. But if you get to his office at 10:30 and he's making entries, he's not a guy that, like, plans ahead. So you're in his office, he's going, oh, yeah, I'm entering this horse, and you, are you open? You know, so my son recognizing when you need to stay open, trying to, you know, ride the livest horse and being Johnny on the spot, knowing when to hit things. And listen, I'd like to think I had a little to do with that. He saw how I would do things, how I would, you know, show up at Kimmel's barn on a Tuesday afternoon, pick him up from school and go by at feed time. You know, because people are like, they, you ingratiate yourself. I remember the late Bruce Johnson, dear friend, when he was training, rode a horse from an aqueduct, horse ran well, rode the last race and drove to Belmont. It's dark, it's 5:30 at night, I'm on my way home. He's in his office, went in the office, and I'm like, you know, Bruce, I really like this horse, I want to ride him back. He calls the owner, hey, Migliori's here. You know how much that means to somebody that the jock stopped after riding all day in the cold at Aqueduct, at Belmont, to check on the horse, how he cooled out. And, you know, so Joey kind of grew up watching that aspect from me, that I would go that extra step. I would always check. I would always stop by if a trainer was there after feed time, you know, when I was done riding. Trevor's the same way. So I knew they were going to hit it off that way. I knew. And one thing in racing, people respect people that work hard. And they see two young guys working hard.
It goes a long way. There's no doubt. There's no doubt, and it, you know, especially a veteran that, you know, that's still getting out there and chasing them down.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and people respect it. You know, trainers work so hard, and I think resentment comes in between trainers and jockeys because the trainer's like, I got this sucker ready. I worked 4 months. I got him sound. I got him right. I've been living with him through his aches and pains, everything. And now I turn over the keys to the car to the jockey, the horse wins, and he gets all the credit. You know, and I think that just builds up a resentment. So if you show that you're willing to work as hard as them, they don't. It's less begrudging. It's not like, well, he just showed up and got the glory. You know, you're in on the team. You know, I always excelled, Steve, in situations, and I think a lot of it had to do with coming up under a contract, very old school, where you were part of the process. You were there in the mornings. You worked with the horses. You worked with the people. You had conversations about what was going to make this horse fulfill their potential or be the best they could be. And I always excelled in those situations, and I enjoyed it more. There's no more satisfying feeling than having your hand in on developing a horse and then being a part of it wins. I guess it's kind of like being part of the pit crew, right? You don't just show up and jump in the car. You're talking about, the front end's a little loose. We got to tighten this up. We got to do that, you know, and gaining that mutual respect and trust where when you say something, it's not just jockey speak or it's not just trainer speak. It's meaningful speak that is going to make the horses better.
Well, I'm delighted for Trevor, who anytime we've had him on and sent him best wishes when he went out west for that period, and then after the baby that I confused for a boy at first. Well, Riley's that's one of those. Could be a guy, could be a gal, it could go either way. Absolutely delighted for him to really, you know, get started again back on the East Coast and have this this excellent start to the season. And I don't know how much
That's
more.
Fun to
I don't know, yeah, I don't know how many. I don't know how much more of the weekend you want to touch on. I'm at wit's end a little bit from going back to Friday with Shirzando, who has to get out of the gate better, but...
Well, you know what, but like even that, that's something, and I watched the head on the other day, and I don't know the horse intimately like you guys do, but sometimes horses get a little preoccupied with the assistant starter, or they have a tendency to want to fight with the assistant starter a little bit. And watching the head-on the other day, or Cezando, I really think he'd be a horse that, as long as he's not, you know, too hard to handle, a horse that would be better off alone in the gate. I think he's just getting really, really preoccupied with the assistant starter. And, you know, again, that's a little bit of a dying art too, though. Every horse gets handled now in the starting gate, where years ago they didn't. They'd put you in the gate, they'd get out. If your horse was acting up, you would ask the starter, "Sir, I need a hand in here. Can I get some help, please?" And you might get it, and you might not. You know, you might get, "Hey, Jock, you got him. You straighten him up, put him on his feet." And you learned how to do that. Guys learning less and less of the nuances of that because they don't have to. You know, they have a handler. But he really looks like a horse to me. I'll talk to Gary about it.
Right.
I think he would be better off being by himself. I really do.
Well, and I think it's time for blinkers too for him.
The only thing is, it's a little bit of a balancing act because he doesn't get away good, and then it looks like if you ask him a little bit, you turn him on too much, he wants to get keen. You know, you don't want him to do everything all at once. So that's the balancing act. You got to figure that one out, and I certainly wouldn't close him up completely. But
no.
You know, and listen, we talk about riders. Riders go through, you know, periods of time where they're just not hitting well. They're not seeing the ball. They're not, you know, and therefore their confidence kind of ebbs. And a rider needs swagger. Rider's got to walk out there like he's the man, you know. It's just such a funny thing. You know, when I was riding confident, probably people thought I was an SOB because I didn't care. I walked out there and a guy would be telling me something and I go, "Nah, we're going to do it this way." And it would work out better, you know, just because they allowed me to do my job then. When you're listening to everybody, by the time you think, that moment's gone. You know, you got to be so instinctual. You can't replace instinct with thought. You have to be able to just live in the moment and do it, and yeah, go in prepared, know the layout of the race and the flow of the race and the competition and their habits. But there's a different connection, horse, rider, and in those moments that happen so fast.
Richie, this was fabulous. Well, I there's probably another six things I could bring up, but I'll save them, and we will reconvene next Monday.
Next Monday. Now I got to go finish playing Gin Rummy with Carmella. She's mad at me. I keep beating her, so I might have to tank one.
Rich Migliori, everybody. Mig, 44.50. Stay warm and keep the water trickling. Let the water trickle. All right. Don't get, you know, the power goes out. Make sure you got the water running. Keep the pipes from freezing. Knock on wood. I've always had one spot on an exterior wall. There's an L. Water comes up from the basement, goes behind a clawfoot tub downstairs, then goes up the wall to the main bathroom, which is the one being worked on. And until I got some insulation blown in there, whenever it'd be real cold, it would freeze. I have to take a hair dryer, reach underneath the tub, and I had like a little trap door that I would open and blow the hot air into where the corner was, the L, and get the ice, get the freeze to thaw. Maybe think of that. Second break of the morning. We're going to come back, visit with Eric Mitchell from Bloodhorse. Eric received an eclipse for his piece about the situation shipping horses by cargo, freight, boat, ship to Puerto Rico. And there was some movement over the holidays. And there's new rules that are going to go into effect in March. So I wanted to give Eric a chance to talk about his interest in the story. And of course, we had discussed this last year with Shelley Blodgett and the girls from the Caribbean off the track retirement service that just work so hard. And they were, of course, thrilled by the news. Back after this, Eric Mitchell, Hour 3, at the races, Sirius XM on this Martin Luther King birthday Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over